most busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It is Tuesday, October 30th, day before Halloween, and I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us right now today. Just visit norml.org. Help make a change in marijuana policy in America. Help end marijuana prohibition in America right now. Just visit normal.org, norml.org, to make a donation or join Normal today. Folks, last night I got a chance to go out to the Cypress Hill concert at the TLA on South Street in Philadelphia. Philly Normal was there with a great table at the event. And many thanks go out to Kevin Zinger and Suburban Noise Records for helping set up this interview. We got a chance last night to interview Sendog from Cypress Hill. He is a very articulate and a long-time outspoken advocate of marijuana reform in this country, and the interview is just great. It'll air here on Friday's Audio Stash. Friday's going to be a very cool show. We're going to speak with Danny Danko and Bobby Black of High Times Magazine about the upcoming Cannabis Cup, and we'll also get a chance to check in with Danny with his great knowledge here on the Audio Stash. Danny Danko, of course, the cultivation editor at High Times Magazine, and we have a monthly segment now with Danny talking about cultivation tips for medical marijuana patients out there. That's all on Friday's Audio Stash. Great content all week long here on the program. Tomorrow, of course, our regular weekly segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, although we're going to hear him a little bit today in our medical marijuana segment that we have today about a raid that took place in Los Angeles. We'll get to that in just a minute. And also in today and tomorrow's program, we're going to feature segments with Paul Armentano, Normal's senior policy analyst, talking more in depth about the weekly press release stories from last week. Today, we're going to speak with Paul about random student drug testing. A new study found that the students who were involved with it really come out of it a lot worse than they go in. Very interesting story out there. We'll speak with Paul Armentano about that today. Also on the program today, a short interview we did with Ed Rosenthal at the Normal 2007 conference. Ed is just a great guy, and he's always a wonderful interview. It was nice to sit down with him there in LA. He received an award from the Normal Foundation at awards night. That audio will be coming online in the Normal Events podcast later this week. Make sure you check out normalaudiostash.com. You can find out all the new links that are online, all the new speeches and information that is up there at the Normal Events podcast. And today here on the program, we have a very interesting segment. When I was out in Los Angeles for the conference, the first night we got there, there was a a pre-registration night, and everyone went up to this beautiful rooftop garden at the Universal Sheraton there in Hollywood. And we have a picture, actually, of the sunset in the rooftop garden up at normalaudiostash.com today. But as we all sort of mingled and talked, as the sun set behind those beautiful mountains beyond Burbank and the headlights came on and the river of cars filling the evening rush hour on the freeway below, about 2 hours into this evening, a young woman called everyone's attention. She said there was a DEA raid happening right then at that moment, and it was close by to the hotel, this hotel where all of the top marijuana reform advocates had gathered for the 2007 conference. So we went over and with video and audio, and we spoke with some of the people there who had just experienced this DEA raid. And thanks to the help of Zach over at Digital Activism Video and Dean Becker there at Drug Truth, along with my own recording there that night, we're going to bring you this piece today about what happens when a medical marijuana dispensary is raided in California, because this is an unfortunate regular reality. So great content all week long here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Our interview with Sendog of Cypress Hill on Friday this week. A piece about the federal raid of a medical marijuana dispensary in Los Angeles. That's coming up here today, along with our interview at the conference with Ed Rosenthal. Let's get things started with an in-depth look at the news. This week, we're featuring a series of segments with Normal's senior policy analyst, Paul Armentano, looking in-depth at the stories in the weekly press release from Normal out each week. You can catch a separate Normal News podcast. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Paul, welcome back here to the program today.
Good to be here, Chris.
Always good to speak with you, Paul. Let's get into this first story. The headline is, "Random drug testing may increase risks among student athletes," study says. "Findings contradict White House publication touting testing's proven benefits," quote-unquote. This really adds more evidence against this type of random testing. Paul, tell us more about the findings here.
This study is actually a really big deal because it was designed in a way to address some of the criticisms that were made of the previous national study that looked at the efficacy of random student drug testing several years ago. There were several criticisms of that study. The largest was that it was not a prospective study. There was no baseline of what level of student drug use existed prior to the advent of the drug testing programs. And there were also criticisms that the study compared different types of drug testing programs. It looked at random drug testing programs versus schools that may have had voluntary programs where kids could be tested if their parents had consented and so forth. Well, in response to that, this study was designed looking at 11 schools in the Portland, Oregon area, and there were five schools that enacted a very similar random drug testing policy of student athletes, and there were six neighboring schools that agreed to implement the same policy but deferred from implementing it for 2 years while this trial took place. And essentially what the researchers did is they asked a number of questions regarding students' drug use prior to the advent of drug testing. And then for the following 2 years, they regularly did 3- and 4-month checks to determine whether students' attitudes toward drug testing had changed and whether their self-reported use of drugs and alcohol was changing during this 2-year period, and they compared the students in the school with the drug testing policies and their attitudes and their drug use to the students in the neighboring schools that did not have drug testing. And what they found was, in fact, the enactment of the random student drug testing program did not show any association with a reduction in the illicit use of drugs or alcohol among the athletes that were being randomly tested. They also found that the athletes who were subject to random testing at the end of this 2-year period had much more negative attitudes towards school authorities and the implementation of random student drug testing than did the students in the schools that did not implement the program.
So basically, the students who have to undergo this testing, they don't like it at all, and they really don't respond well to it over time.
Exactly. And we had some data prior to this study also showing that fairly consistently, students that are subjected to these sort of programs they express negative attitudes toward the authority figures that are imposing this program on them. But it certainly was this, you know, this study and this result is going to really be a major hit to the proponents of random drug testing, because it examined, the two arguments in favor of the program, that in fact it would deter youth, and that in fact students actually want this program because it gives them an opportunity to say no to peer pressure. It really, both of those arguments fell flat at the end of the study. The research couldn't have been any more persuasive that in fact the opposite was true in both of these cases. And as I said, this study was very well designed, so I don't really know how the proponents of random drug testing are going to rebut it, other than say this was a small study in one city and in fact we need a larger national study.
Now, Paul, we've seen a lot of evidence so far that really shows that random student drug testing is both ineffective and somewhat damaging to the students. Do you think if it shows it actually harms kids to drug test them, that it might break this protect the children mantra that's always out there?
It's certainly possible. You know, there's some limited data on parents' attitudes toward these programs. And we do see that actually parents that are questioning student drug testing, they are actually very fearful that their student will be the victim of a false positive test result. When you ask parents who oppose student drug testing why they oppose it, that ends up being the number one concern of parents, you know, outweighing concerns regarding civil liberties and a number of other issues. They are also concerned, like you said, about this idea that their children are going to have more negative attitudes toward school when they are exposed to this program. And this is the second or third time I can think of a study that is reporting that students who undergo student drug testing do express these strong negative attitudes essentially toward the testers.
Very interesting there. That was Paul Armentano, Normal's senior policy analyst. We'll be speaking with him again tomorrow in our look further at the Normal News Weekly press release headlines. This is Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Stay tuned. Our interview with Ed Rosenthal and our medical marijuana dispensary story coming up next.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Here on this program, we have to all too frequently discuss and report on federal raids of medical marijuana patients and providers, primarily in California. And in California, federal agents do regularly raid state-authorized medical marijuana dispensaries. These dispensaries look like any other business, with storefronts, signs, and windows looking inside. The dispensaries themselves are clean and neat, with three or four glass display cases and counters, a few shelves of various supplies, and they often incorporate comfortable couches and chairs for the patients to relax. There are usually a few dozen varieties of cannabis and a good selection of pre-made edible cannabis products, because many medical patients prefer an edible preparation. It works better for their condition. Some of these medical marijuana sanctuaries in California have operated unmolested for years. Others have been raided just a few months after opening. On October 11th, after arriving in Los Angeles just that day for the Normal Conference, I witnessed the tail end of a federal raid on the Arts District Healing Center in northern Los Angeles. We heard about the raid at the pre-registration mixer there at the Normal Conference, and we quickly got the address and drove over to the location. It wasn't hard to find. A police helicopter was flying low with a spotlight, shining down on the modest dispensary storefront. Local police had blocked off the street to accommodate the DEA. We parked about a block away, and that's Zach, our cameraman, and myself running down the street. Zach is with Digital Activism Productions. We raced around the barrier and over to a group of about 100 people. They were medical marijuana activists, mainly organized by Americans for Safe Access, facing off against a line of about 15 to 20 Los Angeles police standing outside. This was the scene. As you can hear, there were scores of protesters swiftly mobilized by Americans for Safe Access in a potent demonstration of ASA's grassroots capability. Many had been there already that day. There was an Americans for Safe Access protest, and many of those involved had gone back to the Arts District Healing Center. The Drug Enforcement Administration was just wrapping up and taking away marijuana and money from the facility in Ford excursions. DEA had entered with loaded and expertly aimed AR-15 assault rifles and wearing the latest in protective body armor. The federal troops put anyone inside onto the floor with rifles pointed directly at them. This DEA operation and the tactics employed are all too common. According to Americans for Safe Access, there have been 45 raids on patients and providers in 2007. More than double since the Gonzalez versus Raich decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. What happens during one of these raids? We spoke with Aggie. She was working behind the counter at the Arts District Healing Center. The calm and sheer determination in this 5'2" young woman was impressive, considering she had just been held at gunpoint by a DEA SWAT team. I asked her about her experience.
Well, we're just hanging out, doing our normal daily thing, you know, helping out patients, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the SWAT team comes in and tells us all to get on the ground. So we were just face down. They handcuffed us. They questioned us each. They took us all outside separately. Apparently nobody talked, thank God. Nobody talked. We have a great crew. They personally took $2,500 from me, and I'm never going to see it again, unfortunately, but, you know, that's okay.
They didn't, like, process the money correctly?
They wrote on the receipt, if you will, that it was an undetermined amount of U.S. currency taken from Carmelita. So,
okay.
I'm pretty sure I'm never going to get any of that back.
Is this
unfortunate, but what can you do?
Is this the first time you've had something like this happen to you working here?
Absolutely. This is the first time anything. We never even thought, you know. And they came after 5 o'clock. We thought they didn't, like, it would never even happen after 5 o'clock, and it was just... It was crazy.
Wow.
But we held it together. We held it together.
Right on. I mean, so they had, I mean, you describe a SWAT team, so they have like assault rifles and things like that.
Yeah, it was pretty, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't really scary to me, but I mean, I imagine that it would be a very scary situation to a lot of people. So, I mean, they just came in here with guns. I mean, at first, the guy standing next to me was just like, dude, get down, SWAT team. And I was like, what? And then I saw them coming in just like, with their helmets and all their black and everything, and their guns just being like, everybody get down. And I was like, whoa. So I was just down.
Wow. What's, you know, on a normal day, you know, of operation, what is this place like?
It's pretty magical. Actually, one of the DEA officers said it was like Disneyland, actually, which is funny. But I mean, it's a great place. I mean, I work here. I mean, obviously, it's a great place. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here, you know? So.
And other than the police, you felt safe here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I personally never even thought this was going to happen. Even with the preparations we took, I was like, oh, man, that's not going to happen.
The federal agents held the customers and employees while they ransacked the dispensary. All of the marijuana was taken, but some of it ended up on the floor, making for a surreal and slightly chaotic scene inside the clinic. But it was not just the pot that was taken, it was the money. Cash from the register, from the safe, and even as we heard, from the employees themselves. The glass on the front of the door of the facility had been smashed, and the place looked like it had been ransacked in a common burglary. On the walls were dry erase message boards with the varieties of cannabis available, and notes pointing out convenient parking for the clinic. But the furniture was tossed about. The display cases were empty, and the pervading attitude of those there was not of fear, but of defiance. When I entered the clinic, there were dozens of people coming and going along with the protesters in front, and standing amidst the aftermath of the raid was a well-known marijuana activist and stand-up comedian, Ngile Belum. He lived close by.
I got the call at 714 that Arc Sister Healing Center was being raided, so right away I called to confirm. We got a confirmation. We sent the emails out, started the text messages and the phone tree. We had a good 75 activists down here before the DEA left protesting. We got the news down here to let them know what's going on. I'm really disappointed that the Los Angeles Police Department is still supporting the DEA on these raids. I think if they're going to uphold city and state law, it's been firmly established in California court that this is a legal business, and they really shouldn't have anything to do with it. That's really the most disappointing thing of this to me. I mean, I'm not surprised the DEA raided somebody, because we did just have a protest, and apparently their pattern is after we have a big protest, they hit somebody the same day.
Really?
Yeah, they did that when we were down. We were actually having a press conference because Dennis Zion, L.A. council member, had written a letter to the DEA asking them to leave the dispensaries alone and let the cities and states work it out themselves. And that same day, they raided the California Patients Group and 10 other spots, including a couple that were already closed because they're not always paying attention. And I'm sure they did that on purpose. They did it on the same day. They're not dumb. You know, they're just misguided. And so it's just a drag.
Well,
and once again, you know, they don't want to let anybody fight it out in court. It's not like they're going to arrest people and take them to court. We can let the lawyers work it out. They just come in, they take the money and the medicine, and they leave. And that's a jack. That's a straight-up jack. You know what I'm saying? It's not fair.
It's harassment. It really is.
It's a power play. It's a control issue. You know what I'm saying? So I think, you know, they should just realize what's really going on and pay attention. They're shooting themselves in the foot. It doesn't make them look like heroes.
Now, this place is in a fair amount of disarray, although there are people around. What does it usually look like in here?
Oh, it's all very neat and nice and orderly and very casual and relaxed. Always had a really nice, pleasant vibe here. The owners are very cool people. You know, the DEA comes in. They knock everything over. They try to create destruction because that's their thing. They want to scare you, but we're not scared.
What about the local police? I mean, you sort of mentioned that because they're working in conjunction with local police here. The streets blocked off and everything like that, too.
The fact that there's a few LAPD agents who are deputized by the DEA, so they kind of work hand-in-hand on that.
That was Ngile Belum there. The raid on the Arts District Healing Center followed a legal assault on the facility by the DEA. Though fully authorized by state law and operating under local guidelines, the DEA first sent a letter to the landlord who owned the building, informing them that his property could be seized under federal statutes. This is an increasingly common method of intimidating the dispensaries. According to some sources at the scene, the landlord then cooperated with federal authorities in planning the raid. The computers at the facility were also searched, and they were roughly handled, compromising business and patient records. They lay on their side just in the front door, where the new patients had their recommendations verified before they could acquire their medicine. The effect of these raids, especially on those who are present in the facilities when they occur, can be profound, and hence a term overused sometimes, but apt in this circumstance. Post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York, and I spoke with him about the psychological impact on individuals that may result from the raids. Mitch, let me ask you, these individuals who are caught up in these federal raids of dispensaries, they have guns pointed at them, their hands are often zip-tied behind their back, they have to watch as these dispensaries are torn apart. Can this type of thing have a long-term effect on an individual psychologically?
We've seen a lot of these raids, and boy, it just makes me want to weep, Chris. I don't know what to say sometimes. To take somebody in a wheelchair and throw them on the ground is just, woo, man, what goes through your mind when you're doing that? I can't fathom it. But absolutely, we end up with patients who have post-traumatic stress disorder after experiences like this. It's just part of what we see in any kind of trauma. Here, in part, if you really want to do the bust, does it have to be this elaborate? Do they have to break windows and throw things and point guns and things like that? These are not violent people, a part of some outrageous underground market in some harmful drug. This is an above-board, state-established institution that is there for the sickest of the sick. If you feel like you got to flex the federal muscle, couldn't you at least say, hey, we're coming to do the raid. Here's what we want. Get all your patients out. We're going to bust you. This is how it's going to be. If you don't cooperate, we're going to break things. But if you do cooperate, we won't. And we're going to take everything that we want to take because, you know, we're the feds. But at least it won't end up creating this whole rip, you know, rip-roaring ripple through the entire community where suddenly people don't have any sense of safety anymore in an area where they had not only found wonderful medicine for relief for their symptoms, but also social support, a loving environment, an opportunity to interact with people who don't think they're crazy simply because they need medication that hasn't been approved by the federal government.
You know, in some of these cases, those who have come out of an experience with post-traumatic stress disorder, they've sued because of that. So is this equally as compelling of a case for some of these patients to perhaps make this sort of thing if these federal raids continue, do you think?
The legal precedents are complicated and sometimes really confusing as far as this stuff goes. But did a raid produce a psychological disorder related to trauma? Absolutely. And in fact, those symptoms are easy to document, and it's easy to point out, you know, the relation in time to the events in order to point out that this is really the source of some of the problems. Whether that's going to, you know, hold up in court and things like that is going to vary time and again. But I would prefer to see folks stand up for their rights in this domain, in part because I'm eager for people to stand up for their rights in any domain. And I feel like it's just part of the opportunity to stand up for getting the cannabis that they need. But also, this is an awful lot to lay on patients. And I'm hoping that folks who were involved in the dispensary raids or who were near them or have any kind of connection to them that they feel like justifies it will also be willing to stand up to this kind of just, you know, tyrannical abuse. I don't even know how else to describe it. And be able to say, you know, we're not going to allow this in our neighborhood. Please don't send law enforcement here. We've already agreed that this is going to be okay. We need to make sure that this never happens again, and particularly not in this violent kind of hostile way.
California has lived with Proposition 215 for over a decade now, and though there is certainly a lot of debate among local and state authorities on how to properly implement the law, one thing is for sure, the law itself isn't going anywhere. California voters continue to poll very strongly in support of medical access, so why is the federal government raiding them at all and using these tactics that terrorize patients and providers? And why aren't the state authorities doing more to try and stop their federal counterparts? Well, the raids are perhaps the most visible aspect of what's become a very complex issue. The DEA saw the Gonzalez versus Raich Supreme Court decision as a green light to interfere with the California medical marijuana program. That opinion, based on an obscure translation of interstate commerce law, has been the legal basis for the intimidating tactics used on businesses and nonprofits and the forced closure of marijuana facilities at gunpoint. These actions have victimized sick patients and turned bright and caring facility operators into victims of federal oppression. The raids themselves do seem random. There is little rhyme or reason to which facility does get raided, and in about half of these raids, not a single person is arrested. There are about 100 defendants right now working their way through federal court in California in cases associated with the raids. The legal defenses that are available in state court for medical marijuana patients and providers may not be mentioned in federal trials. The results of such shown in a recent set of trials and appeals by longtime activist and author Ed Rosenthal. A jury originally convicted him in federal court on cultivation charges after being barred from hearing any evidence on the subject of medical marijuana. But the jury, in that case, took a rare step of speaking out after the trial against their verdict. They seemed to feel upset that the whole truth of the matter was withheld in the trial because of legal technicalities. Rosenthal was eventually allowed to serve a one-day jail sentence by the judge. The issue gets more complex with money. The state of California's Board of Equalization is seeking to require the collection of state sales tax on medical marijuana sold and marijuana products. Although it's important to point out that many medical marijuana facilities have already voluntarily offered up millions of dollars in taxes to the state and the counties where they operate. All of those tax dollars have been kept by those entities. When a statewide medical marijuana sales tax is implemented in California, it will represent the first fully taxed and regulated marijuana market in United States history. And as the millions and millions of dollars in tax revenue start to enter regularly into state coffers, California may begin doing more to protect this revenue stream from interruption and intimidation by federal authorities. In the end, these federal raids are a decision that comes from the top down. The DEA works closely with the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which is a direct office of the White House. While a shift in attitude by the agency heads at the Department of Justice, the DEA, or the ONDCP, even the Oval Office itself, could immediately stop the raids, it is unreasonable to accept that hundreds of thousands of medical marijuana patients, in California at least, would be at the whim of a few federal government officials. There are legislative solutions, including the annually proposed Hinchey-Raubacher Amendment, that directly addresses the issue of such federal raids. But the complexity of the issue on the ground, in the courts, and in the upper echelons of federal authority demand decisive grassroots action and defining federal legislation. Otherwise, the patients themselves are left to protest on the street after the federal government steals their medicine and money. This is Chris Goldstein for Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Thanks to Zach at Digital Activism Productions, Dean Becker at Houston's KPFT, and Mitch Earlywine, as well as those at the Arts District Healing Center, for contributions to this report. Stay tuned later today, an interview with Ed Rosenthal coming up.
Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
And we mentioned Ed Rosenthal there in that report on that medical marijuana dispensary raid. We get a chance to sit down with Ed, who accepted an award at the Normal Conference wearing a wonderful wizard outfit. Ed is a wonderful, outspoken activist and just about as out in front as any American is on this issue. And we spoke with him. We got a chance to sit down with him at the Normal Conference, pulled him aside for this short interview today. Here's Ed Rosenthal.
We're here at the Normal Conference at the Sheraton Universal Hotel in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Ed Rosenthal is here. You accepted an award last night. Ed, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And, you know, what's it mean to have all these activists together here in Los Angeles for you to see all these people together?
There's a critical mass and a lot of networking here, and a lot of ideas are transferred. I think that it's very important.
It's very poignant this year, too, with all that's been happening in Los Angeles and California. You know, having all the activists come together in this kind of setting is pretty poignant this year.
Yes, right before the conference started, there was a raid by the DEA at one of the clubs, at one of the dispensaries. And there's been a lot of pressure on the dispensaries by the DEA, and yet the industry is still functioning here and people are still receiving their medicine.
You know, and the DEA with Los Angeles Police, we went over to the dispensary there on 620 East 1st Street. No one was arrested. They took the medicine and the money, and they kind of trashed the place. That's the common tactic now.
Well, it's actually been going on for many years. In the in Mendocino and Humboldt counties, growers have experienced rip and runs for many years, and it's just that they're urbanizing it.
And it was also, there was a rally, Americans for Safe Access held a rally, and they went back to that dispensary. I mean, do you think it was direct retaliation for the rally earlier that day?
Yes, I think that they, that a lot of this is publicity driven, and when they get bad publicity, they react to it in really irrational ways.
Ed, your cases have really shown the gray area of the law and sort of the animosity of prosecutors and the federal government towards medical cannabis. Do you think also that your case may have taught them a lesson that this is going to get a lot of media play when they do things like this?
I think that they don't care about the media play. They don't care about how the public perceives them, actually, and that they're just... while people who don't relate to society, and the thing is that they are being encouraged at the very top, because we have a government which is in a disconnect with the citizens on so many issues. It's hard to call it a democracy when the public believes one way and the government is taking other actions.
Is there some distress from citizens in California because of all the federal activity with medical marijuana, even not necessarily because they're proponents of medical marijuana per se, but to see that federal activity out here?
Yes, I think that there are a lot of people here who feel that the state should just be left alone. And at the same time, the federal government has been trying to block California from new environmental standards for cars. And so that this is all part of that feeling that the federal government is really obstructing the state and its efforts to help its citizens.
And bringing all these activists together, some are from Oregon, where their program is running as well, and they have an interesting model up there. And some are from states that don't have medical marijuana laws yet. So it seems like people really learn. And when I talk to activists about how they model their medical marijuana laws, they say first California, then they look at Oregon. So this is really a catalyst for other states to start these programs.
It is, and you know there are about 13 states now that have some sort of medical marijuana law that is operable. And ultimately, we're going to look back at this and look at this as a barbaric time when people weren't allowed to have their medicine. And I don't think that marijuana is the only medicine that the government is stopping people from having, because all these pain doctors who provide people who are in severe pain with relief, they're constantly being investigated by the DEA, and many of them stand trial. And it's not only for the total quantity of the medicine that they give, but one doctor was prosecuted for giving 20 pills of a very small dose, for instance, rather than one pill of a larger dose. It's really insane. So that people, there are fewer pain doctors who are actually practicing today, and it's much more difficult for them to give out medicine. So I think that the DEA is totally off kilter and really hurting the citizens.
Now, last time we spoke in a podcast interview, you talked a little bit about your new research into the flavonoids and terpenoids in marijuana and how that may have a different effect on how people sense the effects of marijuana and when they smoke the whole plant cannabis. I wonder if you could talk about that a little more. I mean, flavonoids and terpenoids, I mean, people may associate with flavor because of the name. So it's the flavor and the smell that change it a bit.
Well, what I was talking about mainly was the terpenoids. And you know, people are familiar with aromatherapy and how different aromas and different essential oils will give them different, put them in different moods. And this is part of that. And when they're inhaled, for instance, one of the main terpenes in marijuana is myrcene, and that helps the THC molecule cross through the blood-brain barrier. And so one way people could get higher, for instance, is to find some really ripe mangoes, maybe just a little overripe, and eat a mango before using, about 20 minutes before using marijuana. because it has a lot of myrcene, will help the THC go right into the brain.
That's fascinating. Ed, I really want to thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Ed Rosenthal sitting down with us at the Normal Conference in Los Angeles. Ed, just a wonderful guy. It's always good to see him out there.
To Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow. Podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.